I'm Professor Brad Fulton, and welcome to my Stats Podcast. This is an edited audio recording of my course. Each lecture is its own episode, and there's a total of 24 lectures. This course provides an introduction to the quantitative methods social scientists and data analysts use to collect and evaluate empirical data about society. Through this course, you will learn to gather, describe, and analyze data with an emphasis on the application and interpretation of these methods. This course will also help you to be a more informed and critical reader of academic research, public opinion polling, and advertisement claims that present statistical evidence. Although some of the current events I reference might be dated, the content is timeless. I hope you enjoy this lecture, and if you have any questions, you can email me at bradrfulton@gmail.com. Hi, my name is Professor Fulton. If you like this podcast, you'll love the book I use for the course. It's titled Statistics, Unlocking the Power of Data. This book uses a highly intuitive approach to help students visualize statistical concepts, which accelerates understanding. I've reviewed dozens of textbooks, and Unlocking the Power of Data is hands down the best one out there, mainly because of its unique intuitive approach and straightforward explanations. You can find a link to the textbook in the show notes, and if you use the promo code LOCK5, you'll get a 10% discount. So when we talk about distributions of quantitative variables, they're going to want to know the shape of it, the center of it, and the spread. Those are the three key things that you'll always need to know about a distribution. And if it's bell-shaped like this, you can kind of know a lot of stuff about it without having any numbers. The center is the mean. If we're assuming that the null hypothesis is true, what would be the center of this distribution of the sample statistics? Chelsea?
Sample mean.
Well, so that's right. If this was a sample distribution?
Mean.
Okay. When the null hypothesis is true, what is the mean for this example? So a lot of times, almost always, when you're doing your randomization sampling distribution and you're assuming that the null hypothesis is true, it means that you're assuming that the sample statistic equals zero, like there's no difference, no effect. And so then the center of the randomization sampling distribution will be zero. I'm going to pull back and I'm going to attempt to summarize or to bring together everything we've done up until this point that I think will help you see how it all fits together versus, like, we got bootstraps over here, randomization over here, standard error down here. What I'm going to do right now, I think, well, it'll help you for the exam, and it'll help to bring it all together. So let's see. We'll start right here. What is a population, just generally speaking? In statistics, when you say population, what is it that we're referencing?
All individuals of interest.
So can you give an example of a population? Like, if you're going to do a study, what's an example of a population that you might study?
City of Durham.
Okay, so all the people in Durham. I don't know how many people are in Durham, but let's say 100,000 people. I can't go around and interview all 100,000, so what am I going to do? If I want to find out information about Durham, so what am I going to do?
Take a random sample.
A random sample, perfect. So I pull from this group, you know, all these different people randomly, and I create a random sample. And it's key that it be random. If it's not random, what are some problems that we would have? Rachel?
It could be biased.
It could be biased. And so, yeah, if I just picked all of my friends, it might be people younger versus older or whatever. And then I'm going to collect data on this sample. What are the two types of variables that we could be collecting on this sample? Okay, categorical?
Or quantitative.
Or quantitative. Okay, and with categorical variables, what are the descriptive statistics or the sample statistics for categorical variables?
P-hat.
P-hat, very good. Okay, and for quantitative variables, we can find out a lot more information. So what can we learn from summary statistics or sample statistics can we get from quantitative variables?
The mean.
Okay, what's the symbol for mean?
X bar.
X bar. What other things can we get from quantitative variables?
Minimum.
Minimum, yep. So that would be min and max.
And you can get Q1 and Q3.
Okay, Q1, Q3. What's that? M.
Median.
Median, yep. That's good. Those are some of the quantitative. And then let's say we have categorical and we get a proportion, a p hat. We take this information from the data and we make inferences about the population. And so then what would be the symbol for proportion at the population level, the population parameter? A p, yep. So you have sample statistics and population parameters. And sometimes I'll use words, I'll say like, give me the mean of this, or I might just say X bar is this. And you need to be able to toggle between symbols and words. So if you see p hat, you'll need to know that's the sample proportion. So then we take our sample, we'll use X bar, because it'll be easier for you guys to see. So we're gonna do height. How big is our sample size, McKay?
500.
Okay, 500 people. Yeah. N equals 500. We collect data on people, and we have a distribution of values. So what type of distribution is this? It's the sample distribution, because it's the sample values. And the way we construct it is, remember the histogram that we put in dots? Can someone make an attempt at what each dot would represent in the sample distribution?
Person.
A person. And what about that person if we're measuring height? Yeah, their height. So you can kind of see in the population, a lot of the people are going to be around similar heights, but then you're going to have a few people on either extreme, some really tall people, some really short people. But it's important to remember that this is our sample distribution. It's the distribution of values for whatever variable that we're measuring. Let's say the average height is 64 inches. Okay, so we have a population of Durham, we took a sample of 500, and then we measured everyone's height, and the sample mean is 64. If I want to make an inference to the population of what the mean height of people in Durham is, what would be my best estimate at the mean height of people in Durham? 64. So our best estimate would be 64 inches. But this is just based off of one sample. And so we don't know how much the sample mean varies. So what would we do if we wanted to find our confidence interval?
What sampling distribution?
What type of sampling distribution? So what we're wanting to find is the distribution of sample statistics. Sort of like if we drew another 500 and calculated the mean height and then drew another 500. So we want like 1,000 sample means because we want to look at the confidence interval of this point estimate. So there's randomization sampling distribution. What's the other kind that we do?
Bootstrap.
This is kind of the reason why I want to walk through all this is so you can see when you do a bootstrap and when you do a randomization. So we're going to do a bootstrap distribution. What is the center of our bootstrap distribution? What's the actual value of our bootstrap sampling distribution going to be? Why zero? Well, okay, so when we generate the bootstrap distribution, what information are we using? Remember when we did the Reese's Pieces? We had the bag of Reese's Pieces, and we couldn't go to the Hershey factory, so we used our random sample of the Hershey factory, which was the bag, and I would pick out one Reese's Pieces, write down the information on it, and then put it back in, and then I pick out another one. So where was I pulling our information from when we do a bootstrap sampling distribution?
Sample.
Uh-huh. If we're pulling from our original sample to generate the 1,000 new ones, what would be mean height of that distribution over there?
So 64.
Yep, it'd be basically 64, because if you do 1,000, the combinations that you pull out are ultimately going to converge on 64 because you're pulling from the same sample. So, and this is important that you understand that the bootstrap distribution, the center of it is going to be the same as the center of your original sample. And it's because you're pulling the information from your original sample.
So bootstrap samples should be the same as the original?
Yes.
So each individual time you run it to get the bootstrap sample, it'll be different, but the total...
The mean.
That's not like each time you run it. Okay.
So again, this is a distribution. We could put in dots. So this is the bootstrap sampling distribution. And what does each dot represent there? Each sample, and what specifically about each sample? The mean, yeah? The mean what? Of what characteristic? You're getting it. We're interested in the height of people in Durham. We took one sample, which was individual heights, and then we took the mean value of those individual heights to get a sample mean. But we want to know how much the sample statistic varies if by doing different samples. So then we could have taken 1,000 new samples from here, but we didn't have the money to do it, so we did a bootstrap sampling distribution where, just as Chelsea said, each dot represents a sample of 500, and in each of those samples we have the height, we can calculate the mean height. And so what each dot ends up being is a sample statistic, which is the mean height for that particular sample. You wouldn't know this, but I would provide this information, or a stat key would. The standard deviation of this is 0.01. I wouldn't make you calculate it for this larger number, but standard deviation for this is 3. So this is the standard deviation of the sample distribution. And so let's look at this example. The mean height is 64, and the standard deviation is 3. And I have a friend, he's 5 feet tall. And so how many inches is that?
60.
So my friend, XI, his height is 60 inches. He's really bummed because he thinks he's super short, and he thinks he's really unusual because he's only 60 inches tall, you know, the only one out there who's that height. But if we had this information about Durham, and we knew that the mean height was 64 and the standard deviation was 3, and you wanted to console him and say, hey, you know, you're really not that short compared to the population, or you might say, yeah, you are pretty unusual. How could you use this information here to help him see where he fits in the distribution? Brittany.
You could calculate the standard deviation, and then from that, find out to his score, like how far away he is from that average.
Okay, so how would we do that? So I gave you the standard deviation.
Okay. So you would take his height, track to first.
So,
his height minus the x bar, so 64.
Okay.
And divide that by 3.
And so that would be negative 4 over 3, which is 1.333.
Yeah.
So equals. And so what is this value?
That's the z-score.
That's the z-score. Okay. So you tell him, don't worry, you have a z-score of negative 1.33. What does that mean?
He's within like 95%. Two standard deviations is 95%.
Okay. So what would be the upper bound of the standard deviation?
Two standard deviations in each direction. So if the standard deviation is 3, so you multiply that by 2, you get 6, and that adds 6.
So like one standard deviation from the mean would be 67. Two standard deviations would be 70. So again, my friend here, he's 60 inches tall. He thinks he's unusual, but Brittany says, your z-score is actually negative 1.33. And he's like, what? So can Rachel interpret this in context of this graph?
What means that you're 1.33
from the mean. Uh-huh. In which direction?
To the left.
Okay. Your 1.33 standard deviations from the mean. So it's basically, what is 1.33 times 3?
4.
Good. So you
it's 399.
Yeah. You said you're 1.33 standard deviations below the mean, and so you're 4 below the mean, which is 60, which is actually what that person is. And so then here's this person's position or location on the distribution, and they want to know, am I unusual or not? And so then, Chris, what would you say?
You're still in the 95% range.
Yeah. So you're not that unusual within the general range. Like, you're not one of these extreme people. This is what we're able to do with sample distributions. And you can do this with SAT scores or whatever it is, and you kind of want to know, well, where do I fit on the distribution? So then over here, this is the standard deviation of the sampling distribution. What's another name for that?
Standard error.
Standard error. so that you don't get confused between this standard deviation and that one. So when we talk about my friend who's 60 inches, that's like a separate thing. We're done talking about that. We're back to talking about what Tim wanted to know of the mean height for the population. And our best estimate was 64 inches, but we want to then generate a confidence interval for that estimate. Would we use this distribution or that distribution to calculate the confidence interval? Does someone know the equation for confidence interval of a point estimate?
Sample mean plus or minus 2 times standard error.
Okay, sample mean plus or minus 2 times standard error. And that gives you what percent confidence interval?
95.
Yep, that provides the 95% confidence interval. The point estimate is sort of our best estimate of the population parameter. So that's the point estimate. And does anyone know what this part of the equation, another name for it? Brittany?
Margin
of error. It's the range of plausible values for this point estimate. Okay, our best estimate of the mean height in Durham is 64 inches, and we're 95% confident that the true population mean will fit within this range.
Because we don't really know.
You don't really know unless you actually went and did it, but the point estimate gives the best estimate, and then the confidence interval reduces your precision, but you can say I'm 95% confident that it's within this range. Okay, you see this range is a very tight range. If you tried to calculate the confidence interval using this information, you would have a range of 58 to 70. All this is doing, this 95%, it isn't a confidence interval, it's just 95% of the sample values fit between 58 and 70. If you have a really, really large confidence interval, you know something's off because the confidence interval should be pretty tight if you have a large sample size. So what would be the second way to calculate the 95% confidence interval for our point estimate?
Percentile.
Yeah. Percentile method, and what is that?
So you just drop the values after a certain percent, but you can determine what percent. So like if you wanted a 99% confidence interval, you can use this method and
then
cut off the bottom.
Yep. Let's just do the 95% confidence interval. If we're doing a 95% confidence interval, and this is the 95% points, the upper bound, the lower bound, what would these values be? We're calculating the confidence interval for this point estimate. If I said 95% of the values fit within these two bars, what would the points be? We've already calculated it one way. I might be making it more confusing than it needs to be, but it's basically, yeah, you know that this is going to be here and this is going to be that one. You know if you plug in these values here and here, that creates the 95% percentile method. It's telling you the same thing, but coming at it from a different direction.
So you basically have to answer for like that equation before you can do the percentile method. You can't do like the percentile method then that way.
Well, so the like with StatKey, we could say, show me where the middle 95% of the values lie, and then it will draw those lines for you. No, I guess there's multiple ways to do it. If I just gave you this information, the standard error is 0.01, and I said, give me the 95% confidence interval on the graph, the way you would do it is to get the 95% confidence interval, how many standard errors do you go out? You go out 2, so you can go to this point would be 64.01, and then this point would be 64.02. And then you go in this direction, it would be 63.9.
Oh, because you already have the standard deviation? So
yeah.
That's all you have to do?
Yeah.
But you want to give a 64, right?
Often when you get distributions, they typically tell you the mean and the standard deviation. But I might say the sample mean is 64, and then you would have to know that the center of the bootstrap distribution is the sample mean. But then I might also say, and the standard deviation of the sample distribution is 3, and then you'll be like, oh, crap. Do I use 3 or do I use 0.01.
0.01.
Yeah, but in the heat of the moment, you might be like, oh, wait, which one?
So there's really no way to do the percentile method of that. Because, I mean, that's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, except for the 95%, because you just know.
Right, but that's the same as doing the marketing.
Yeah, you're right. And actually, that's where this number 2 comes from. So if we changed our percentile to 99 percentile, to do the percentile method and say, where do 99% of the middle values lie? Or there's a way to do this equation where you change this number, it's like 2 point, it's a little bit more, it's gonna push you out further. So, okay, so this is bootstrap. So let's say there's previous research that was done and it concluded that the mean height in Durham was 63.5 inches. But we come along with our fancy random sample and stuff and we say, I challenge that claim. There's a claim out there that the mean height is 63.5. And I come along as the social scientist and I say, I'm gonna challenge that claim and I have an alternative hypothesis. My alternative hypothesis is that the mean height is actually 64 inches. And so if I was going to set up a hypothesis test, how would I construct that? What would be the null hypothesis? So what's the common belief that's out there? The claim that's been out there or existing is that the mean height is 63.5. And so then our alternative hypothesis would be what?
Greater than 63.5?
Uh-huh, yeah. X bar greater than 63.5. Exactly. You don't have to give a specific number. You don't even have to say 64. You just have to say greater than 63.5. So then the way that we would set this up with the randomization sampling distribution, we would calculate the sample statistics as if the null hypothesis was true. What would be the center of this randomization sampling distribution if the null hypothesis was true?
63.5.
Yep. And this is just kind of important because it wouldn't be 64. Like, you wouldn't take your original sample mean, but this is a distribution in a world in which the null hypothesis is true. So the mean of this distribution is going to be what the mean value would be if this was true. Almost all the time, it's going to be 0, but for this example, I couldn't really do 0 because it wouldn't make sense. So then you're going to get this. Standard error is 0.0002 because it could be different. So then if we wanted to calculate the 95% confidence interval for this, so this is a point estimate of the population mean under the null hypothesis. What would be the confidence interval of this point estimate?
63.7 and 63.5%.
Yeah, 63.52 and 63.54 and then 63.1. So the 95% confidence interval would be this. And then we have our sample statistic. Yes?
You will all agree with the standard error.
Yeah. So this is our randomization sampling distribution. And so we create a distribution as if the null hypothesis was true. And then to do the hypothesis test, we need to see where our observed sample statistic fits on this distribution. It fits, actually it fits way out here. And so if it fits way out here, what do you think the p-value? Restating, what is p-value? The probability of getting a sample statistic from this distribution that is as extreme as that, and then it's very small. Or another way of thinking about it is the proportion of values that are as extreme as this one, and it's 0.0001. Randomization sampling distribution, and this is used for hypothesis tests. It's going to be centered on whatever the null hypothesis value would be.
And then the normal sampling distribution is based on.
Bootstrap sampling is for confidence intervals.
And then what is sampling?
And then this is a sample. It's just a sample distribution. To sort of pull it all together, our alpha level is 0.05. So what would be our formal decision about this hypothesis test?
Reject and null in favor of
Yes. I'm going to take a little bit of a step here to show you how these two things are actually related. We did our study, and we got a point estimate of 64. The confidence interval for that point estimate is 63.98 to 64.02. For our hypothesis test, we have a point estimate as well, which is 63.5. And then that has a confidence interval. And what we're doing in a hypothesis test is saying, does the range of plausible values for the null hypothesis and the alternative hypothesis overlap? Because if they overlap, then our sample that we got could have occurred by random chance if the null hypothesis was true. In this case, we rejected the null hypothesis because the confidence interval for our sample only goes down to 63.98. So with this sample, we're 95% confident that the true population mean is within this range. And the null hypothesis would say, if the null was true, we're 95% confident that the mean would fit within this range. When the value for our alternative hypothesis is outside of this range, then we can reject the null hypothesis because our evidence shows that the null hypothesis isn't true. So you actually use the 95% confidence interval. The confidence interval and the hypothesis test are related, but you often just sort of see them as two separate things. But it actually, what you're testing is your sample, does it fit within the 95% confidence interval of the null hypothesis? And if it does, then it could have just occurred by random chance if the null hypothesis was true. So that sort of tries to pull together everything. So you can see, when you want confidence interval, you use bootstrap sampling distribution. When you want to do hypothesis tests, you do randomization sampling distribution. That brings us up to speed with everything that we've done so far, all the different sample statistics, population parameters. And I'd say for the exam, part of your note sheet should just have the terms, and then if there's symbols associated with it, because I think that will help you as you read the questions. You'll be like, oh, okay, sampling distribution. Let me see. That is this, and have that. And probably the other thing would just be doing practice problems. I think it's all of the odd problems have the solutions in the back. So you can work through some of those. And I sent part two from yesterday's assignment that gives you sort of the template for how to walk through each of those steps, how to form a null hypothesis, an alternative hypothesis, the sample statistics that you're going to use, the significance, making the formal decision, and even interpreting the results. So from the review slides, are there questions, particular slides that you're wanting to have a refresher on?
What's like the definition of like randomized process?
The key thing with the randomization process is you have your original sample and you're wanting to create a new sampling distribution under the conditions where the null hypothesis is true. So like with the gender and exercise study, the null hypothesis said that there is no difference in the amount of exercise time amongst men and women. We had our data set of male or female in the first column, and then the second column was exercise time. And the randomization process to create the new randomization sampling distribution was we just switched male and female randomly. We randomly assigned them to exercise hours so that it didn't really matter what your gender was on the amount of time you spent exercising. It creates a sampling distribution under the conditions that the null hypothesis is true. Brittany, did you have a slide?
I had a question on one of the homework.
Uh-huh.
His assignment five. I just didn't understand the difference between like a strong correlation and a strong trend.
So if we have this, which is height and weight, what would be the direction of the correlation between height and weight?
Positive.
And that's all you need to know. And what the assignment was saying is that it trends upward.
Right. I think it was actually B, because it was talking about how it was, we see a positive upward relationship in the trend, but it's not very strong. Is that because they're spread out?
Yeah. So I won't have you differentiate between, is this a positive correlation or negative correlation? Okay. And then are correlations resistant to outliers? No. Because let's say we had a really tall, skinny person, and it would say that the correlation is actually a lot less than what it really is, whereas if we took out the really tall, skinny person, that would be the correlation value. Questions with the slides?
For the formula for the population parameter, is the mean over the standard deviation of the population?
So, to know the population parameter, well, in this course, what's the only way that we can come up with the population parameter? Yeah, we take a sample, and then we get a sample statistic, like a sample mean, and that gives us a point estimate for the population parameter. In general, we typically never know the population parameter, we only estimate it.
So the point estimate and population parameter is the same?
Yeah, the point estimate is our best estimate
of
the population parameter. And you'll always hear me say it's our best estimate of the population parameter, because we don't know. But when we create a confidence interval, we can say we're 95% confident that the population parameter fits within this interval.
When it's asking for relevant parameters, what all are we supposed to include? I was getting confused.
Sure.
On what exactly is
it? Oh, for the hypothesis test?
Yeah.
Okay. So it depends what your research question is. Can you think of an example of...
Or even like the exercise one, like the difference in exercise between them.
Okay, so we have exercise is one variable and then gender. So if that's the scenario, these are the characteristics that we're going to be running the hypothesis test on. So we need to know the sample statistics for these. With exercise, you first have to say, is this a quantitative or categorical variable? And so what would you say for that? So it's quantitative, and so then with the example we use, what's the sample statistic that we're going to be working with? Okay, so it'd be X bar. That's one relevant sample statistic. Then with gender, is it categorical or quantitative?
Categorical.
So proportion, P hat. And then the actual alternative hypothesis is going to be, what did we say for that one?
The average male is greater than.
The average what of the male?
Exercise.
Yep. So another relevant statistic would be X bar of females, exercising females, and X bar of exercising males.
So basically, for a relevant parameter, you're just going to define your variable.
Yeah, because if you just said my null hypothesis is X bar minus X equals zero, I'd be like, what does X bar mean? You mean like the overall exercise time? Do you mean, so that's why, but if you did do this, so that I can look at this and I go back here and look at how you defined it, then I kind of know what you're talking about. So yeah, some of you like would just put in symbols and I'd be like, well, what are you measuring? It just lets the reader know these are the sample statistics that I'm going to be using in this hypothesis test. So the equation for standard error is the same as the equation for standard deviation. If we had like 1,000 values, I wouldn't make you do it, but if I had 3 values and I said, what's the standard deviation of this sample of 3, that's doable. With the exam, the more you show your work, the better, because if you just say, this is the answer, and it's wrong, then I have nothing to work with to like help you out. My goal is to help you out. So I need stuff to say, oh, you get a point for doing that right and that right. So, yeah.
Sorry, she was talking about standard deviation. So if you said like you did 3, so you get the answers, then what do you do after that part?
Add them together.
Yeah, the summation symbol.
Oh, yeah.
Which means add each of the blocks together. Just showing your work would be valuable, and the test is designed to show the spectrum of understanding, so I don't expect anyone necessarily to get it all right, but I don't expect everyone to get it all wrong. So don't freak out if you're like, I studied and I should know all of this. It'll be a challenging exam, mainly because there's no point in asking questions that everyone could get right. So there'll be a spectrum of stuff, so don't freak out. And if you have other questions that you want to ask just right after class, that's fine too.